We extend Christian greetings this morning. It's a privilege to be here with you. Appreciated the thoughts that have been given this morning in both devotionals. Last month, I was given an assignment for a topic at our minister's meeting. And the title of the topic, I felt like they were, when they assigned the topic, maybe they're preaching the message in the topic a bit. But the title of the topic was Biblical Methods for Meeting the Financial Needs Within the Fellowship. And I struggled a lot with that message. And it was suggested, and different of you asked me about it, so I thought maybe it'd be appropriate to share it here. And it was suggested that I do that sometime, but I'm going to do that, but I have given it a different title. And this is taken a little bit out of context, this title, and I'm not even going to turn to the text, but it was when Jesus was sending out the disciples, he said, "Freely ye have received, freely give." And that's what I'm using for my title. Brother Steve read a verse that says, "But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare." They that will be rich. And who would be rich? And I'd like to read a couple stories about people and see if you can identify who has a desire to be rich in these stories. First, let's look at Luke 16, verse 19. Luke 16, verse 19, "There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus which was laid at his gate full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And in hell he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." I think it's easy to identify the man here that had the desire to be rich. I don't think we need a lot of further comment. And I'm going to read a lot of scripture this morning and let it speak for itself. Let's go now turn to John 12. And I believe I'm going to take the time to read this passage as well. At least we'll start at verse 3 of John 12, and this is Jesus is in the house of Bethany, and Mary and Lazarus and Martha were there. In verse 3, "Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. And Jesus said, Let her alone against the day of my bearing, which hath she kept this, for the poor ye have always with you, but me ye have not always." And it seems like this area of finances, of riches, is something that cuts to the heart. It's something that we, when we're identifying the person that would be rich, it's the person that has a little more than us. That's how we identify it. But the person that would be rich is the person with a heart of covetousness. And that's what we see, I guess. Here we have this rich man, and we have this beggar, and he was taking care of this beggar with the crumbs from his table. And he probably was handing him a little extra as he went by. But we see he ended up lifting up his eyes in hell and seeing Abraham. And seeing this poor beggar. And we come over here and we see this rich lady. We say, well, she couldn't afford this. This was a poor family, no doubt. This was almost beyond their means to be able to go waste this money on this ointment. And, you know, I think I hear this mentality a little bit in our circles sometimes. Think what could be done if that money would be used for the poor. Ever hear that? Think what could be done. Now that's one thing if we're saying about ourselves. But here he's saying that he's looking at somebody else critically. They that would be rich. See that heart of covetousness in Judas here. He says, oh, that could have been sold to the poor. And said it wasn't because he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief. That's a heart of covetousness. That's the introduction to my introduction. Now, if you could open your Bibles to 2 Corinthians. We're going to go through chapters 8 and 9. And I think I'm going to take the time again to just read these chapters. And I'll just read a section at a time and make a few comments as we go through. And I've given some titles to these different sections, but this is Paul is commending and teaching about sharing among the saints. And I believe we'll just start in here and make some observations as we go through this these two chapters. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we do to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. And this they did, not as we hope, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God, insomuch that we desired Titus that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also. Now, Paul is talking to the church at Corinth, and he's talking about the people of Macedonia. And he's talking about the very poor people of Macedonia, and he said, I'm going to inform you, I'm going to talk to you about how the grace of God was bestowed on the people of Macedonia. They received the grace of God because in their great trial and affliction they gave. And that's my first point, is God hath chosen the poor to meet the needs of his people. It's not they that would be rich, it's they that would be poor to meet the needs of his people. That's who God has chosen to meet the needs. James 2:5 says, hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith? God hath chosen those, here it says, and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him. But ye have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? And we heard that phrase this morning, supposing that gain is godliness. Another thing I'd like to look at here, it says in verse 5, it says, and they did, not as we hope, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. I think this sharing is a spiritual work. And I'd just like to say that I have been very blessed by the ministry of this congregation. And this is not in any way chiding us. It's just an encouragement and also just sharing what God showed me about some of these principles as I went through these passages. So making this practical, how can we have the grace of God bestowed on us? I believe that needs, sometimes when there's needs, we can try to appeal to what we perceive as wealthy individuals. And it's the thing of looking up to the rich person again. But let's appeal to a Christian brotherhood. Let's work together as a brotherhood. And as the Spirit of God moves, we move together to share. Going on, Christ, the example of Christ. Christ is a perfect example of becoming poor so that we might be rich. Verse 7, therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all diligence and in your love to us, see that ye abound in grace also. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others and to prove the sincerity of your love. For ye know that the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, and ye through his poverty might be rich. Now if we think about that, that was so unfair. But Christ became poor so that we could be rich. Christ became nothing so that we could be something. And how can we simulate this Christ-like method? How can we portray the mind of Christ? If we go back to Luke 16, and I'm not going to read this parable, but in the beginning of Luke 16, there's the parable of the unjust steward. And it's probably the parable that we have the most difficulty with. Where this man went and he saw that his position was not very secure, and he went and he started slashing bills. And he was the unjust steward and he was commended. So what was Jesus trying to teach in this parable? I believe that what Jesus was trying to teach is that when we look at values, the values are established differently in heaven than they are on earth. They're established differently in that kingdom. He's teaching that it's possible, and if we go to Matthew 6, we see that, to put treasure in heaven. And the way the balance sheet works in the kingdom of heaven, we become poor so that we can be rich spiritually. A reduction in assets can increase our net worth. Jesus said, look at some more Jesus teaches. He said, blessed are the poor. Blessed are the poor in spirit. And we said, well, that's humility. But if you study that, that's more than humility. Humility is actually an aspect of being poor in spirit. It's the spirit of being poor. That's what that actually means. And it says, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. There's a reward. There's the inheritance. That's how the balance sheet works. And he also says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And we see that we have a very difficult time analyzing whether we're rich or poor. If we look at Jesus' messages to just two churches, I'm just going to read two verses. To Smyrna, Jesus said, I know thy works. This is in Revelations 2:9. I know thy works in tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich. I know thy poverty, but thou art rich. And he said to the church of Laodicea, Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. See, one said they were poor, but Jesus said they're rich. And the other said they're rich, and Jesus said, you're poor. And I believe this, the outworking of this was up a couple verses, and also verse 24. I'm going to jump ahead and read that right now. Wherefore, show to them that before the churches the proof of your love and to our boasting on your behalf. Proving the sincerity of our love. That's part of becoming poor, becoming Christ-like, is showing our love for others. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to show our love. It's not an opportunity as Christians. We're not in our community here. I think this is fair to say. If you take the scale of the world, we're rich. If you take the scale of America, we're rich. So this isn't thinking here about how other people have opportunity to love us. This is how I have opportunity to love each other people. And that's how I can prove the sincerity of my love for Christ. 1 John 3:17 says, but whoso hath this world's goods and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? I've heard that verse used against the church. I've heard that verse used, how dwelleth the love of God in you people, you didn't help me. And that is the spirit of Judas. If that's what we're here for, if you're here for the welfare check, there's an office in Linn County, in Albany, where you can go and sign up for that. But we're here to meet each other's needs. And also, I've heard about brethren in the church. Well, there's programs they can get on. About someone that's poor. Well, there's don't bother me with it. There's things they can do. That also can be the spirit of Judas. And I think these things take discernment, and I hope to get into that a little more. But I think we need to be careful of our spirit of covetousness as we think about these issues. And as we go on, 2 Corinthians 8, verse 10. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which ye have. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. For I mean not that other men be eased and ye burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, and there may be equality. As it is written, he that hath gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. Going to read from James a couple verses. I could about turn to James and read the whole chapter of James 2. I think I'll pick out a couple verses here, verses 5 and 6. Hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith, and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him. But ye have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? And it talks also about respect of persons. It talks about meeting needs of people. Be warmed and filled and not meeting the needs that are in front of us in James 2. But we see that giving has a purpose. Giving has a purpose. It's not just, you know, there's different motives for giving. And I thought about this. You know, sometimes we can give to satisfy our own guilt for what we have. You know, I've telling on myself a bit here, but for our anniversary, we went up to one of the steakhouses off not far from the river up in Portland. They had a very nice steakhouse. Afterwards, it was still early, and my wife and I took a little walk around the area. And just, if anyone's walked around along the river up there, you know that it's just a lot of homeless people up there. And to be honest, I didn't feel guilty. I'm just confessing here, I guess. I think a habit of eating at fancy steakhouse is a mistake. But I think if we go back to John 12, there are occasions of celebration. And I think they should be done discreetly. But I'm not saying that we should never do those things. But I'll have to admit, I went down there and I was just thinking, wow, if I could just help these guys. But you know, my tendency is to put $5 McDonald's cards, because it doesn't do any good to give a person to those guys cash. Put them in the visor of my vehicles, and as I go by, hand them a $5 McDonald's card as I'm going to the steakhouse. See, it salves my conscience as I'm going to. It doesn't disrupt me. That can be a motive of giving. So we're going to give to salve our covetousness. Is what it boils down to. Or do we give out of the opportunity to love? 1 Timothy 6:6. There's a couple. I'm going to read three verses here. Godliness with contentment is great gain. These were already read this morning. For we brought nothing into the world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. I call this NINO. If anybody that's done inventory, they know what FIFO is. First in, first out. This is a principle that we need to get a hold of. And the way we live sometimes, I wonder if we've gotten a hold of it. It's called NINO. Nothing in, nothing out. And that's the way we're going to live. But now there is a way. There is a way to take something out. And that's buying ahead. Putting our treasures in heaven. And then having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. Having our basic needs met, let us be content. Going on. Verse 16. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care in the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went unto you. For we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. Not that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us with his grace, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind. Avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent upon the great confidence which I have in you. Whether any you inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren be inquired of, they are the messengers of the churches in the glory of God. Wherefore, show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and our boasting on your behalf. We see here providing things honest in the sight of God and the sight of men. We see an accountability. And I think that's important in God's funds. But also we see this thing of giving with simplicity. And we can maybe look at some more of that a little later. I'll bring that in here. Romans 12 talks about giving with simplicity. And we know Jesus says he watched the giving on that occasion where the widow gave her two mites. He saw the difference of giving with simplicity or not. And also in Matthew 6, Jesus teaches, do not let the left hand know what the right hand does. And if we do our giving openly, that's how we can expect to be rewarded. In 1 Corinthians 16, Paul taught to be orderly about our giving. Don't wait till we come and make a big collection, but do it. So there's no gatherings when I come for this collection, but just do it in an orderly fashion. Going on, I'm behind here. Verse 1 of chapter 9, for as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you, for I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast to you, to them of Macedonia and Achaia, was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf. And as I said, ye may be ready. Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not of covetousness. I'll stop there for now. I thought this was quite interesting that he's bragging about Macedonia, or boasting, using his word. He's boasting about Macedonia to the Corinthians, and then he gets to the next chapter and says, and I've been boasting to the people of Macedonia about you, so you better be prepared and don't let me down when I get there. But notice this principle of giving of bounty and not of covetousness. Giving of what we have extra. And there's the thing of sacrificial giving, but that's not the point here. And sometimes it's good. I'm not speaking against sacrificial giving. But also, I think this thing of giving not as of covetousness, there's a real point as we're thinking of the sharing. And this I think is sometimes we're a victim of ourselves in this, that or this thing of the guilt giving. We go to these missions and these foreign lands, and these people are doing everything wrong. They could be making money like we are, and all they need is a tractor, because they're working with hand tools and they're barely making it. And we have this guilt thing, and we buy them a tractor, but we're buying it so that it's not so that they can sustain themselves. It's to relieve our guilt, and it's a never-ending cycle. Then it just starts one thing and then the next and then the next. And actually what we're trying to do is reproduce our American lifestyle in another country, in another culture. And that's unfair to those churches. That's unfair. When we give in areas that aren't real needs, it produces covetousness and not thankfulness. when we give. And now there's a place, I believe, for gifts among people. But as a church, as a brotherhood, as we share in areas that aren't real needs, it doesn't have the proper results. Having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. We're sharing in real needs. If you slip down to verse 11, it says, being enriched in everything to all bounty, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. And proper giving will always result in thankfulness. Verse 6, but this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall also reap bountifully. This is of God, a law of God, and it's given right in this. And now if we're going to have to use God's principles and expect God's results, if we're expecting that if we invest heavily, we're going to receive heavily financially, that may be the case, and it might not. If we believe that if we share heavily, that God's just going to take care of our house and food and clothes, that's not necessarily the case. We need to remember God's principle that when we sow investments, our sharing, we're going to reap spiritual blessing. That's the way to gain value with God. It's the law of sowing and reaping. And this is the context that's given in here. Every man according to as he hath purpose in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly. Never given grudgingly is not given. Giving, real giving, godly giving. Not grudgingly or of necessity. For God loveth a cheerful giver. God loves a humble, cheerful giver. Acts 20, verse 35. Jesus said, I'm quoting from Paul. And Jesus said, the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. I believe I've observed this, that more loyalty is gained by giving than by receiving. Now, I think it's important here that we understand that I think it's right that we receive sometimes. As brethren in our churches, I think it's important that we humbly receive as well sometimes. But I'm speaking specifically to sharing this morning. I believe that I'm going to go into some practical points here. I have more than what I'll get through, but I'll get started for the next 10 minutes anyway. I believe that we have lost some of these concepts. And I believe one of the things we're a victim of is consumer credit. As Brother Edwin Eby talked about credit being an opportunity, we look at it as an opportunity and we look at it as a gift, this credit thing. And debt is actually binding. And it's affected our mentality of even what we have and who we are. And we can actually simulate a higher lifestyle than what we can afford. And then the bill comes and we can't share because we had a different way of taking care of our abundance. And Citibank and Bank of America are the winners. And I don't know about you, but I don't even like those guys very well. I would much rather share with a family in Haiti that needs food. Also, we have a tendency, and with modern medicine, we can almost buy life by length of life. And there comes a point where it's right to say, you know, rather than spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, or whatever the number, it's better to accept that God, we are born to die. And that's God's way of receiving us. Now, where to make that decision, I'm not trying to make that for anybody, but I know of men that have faced serious heart problems, and they've just said, you know, they've lived a good life. They're just going to let it take its course. And it's been a blessing watching that. I know of those that have gone through the surgery, and they really did not have a very good life after that. But then, you know, the answer for a young parent, a younger person, could be completely different as they're analyzing this. So I'm not trying to make anybody's decisions for them. I'm saying I think we need to be practical. We need to be real about making these decisions. God's people are a giving people. They take care of each other. We see that in the collection of the saints in Jerusalem. And the deacons were appointed to take care of needs, real needs. There was land sold. And it's especially to those of the household of faith. I recommend giving through a congregation rather than individually as primary. I don't have problems with people sharing, but I'm not going to go into that further. I have reasons for it. If you have questions, ask me. The second principle I'd like to go look at is what I call the Matthew 18 principle. And I believe this applies in finances as well as many things, but the principle of Matthew 18 is that the problem needs to be solved as small as possible. But the problem must be solved. And that's the same here. And that's where, you know, if someone has a need, if a friend has a need, it's okay to help with that. And sometimes it should be done on a congregational level. Sometimes there can be appeal to a wider fellowship. And I would say if we're not giving, if we're only meeting our own needs in America, if we're only meeting the needs of the Halsey Mennonite Church here, we are not doing enough. We have sufficient to address other areas of need. You know, we don't have world hunger in our circles, and world hunger is a real issue. Analysis of needs takes discernment, and I kind of covered this already. I think I'm going to go on. Another thing I think I mentioned before that stuck out to me with Brother Edwin's message is that idols are security features. And you know, a lot of times when this discussion comes up, it's how are we going to work? And I've been a little, in the past, I've had my times. We have on this whole health thing, on insurance, we have the Burger King here. We have it your way. It's pretty much each person up to their own. And I've resented that. It's kind of hard to administrate. It's kind of hard to know sometimes what to do. But I've come to see it as a bit of a blessing. Because I don't want, if the church becomes your security feature, in this sense, the church can become your idol. Follow me? Now I think there's probably right ways to do it, to address some of those things. But Jesus said, the poor you will have always with you always. And we're always going to have opportunity to share. And I think we need to be focused on our opportunity to share. And it's the insurance companies that try to put all the what-if scenarios in our heads. And that brings me to the next one. God blesses faith. And I'm going to step back to the last one. Step one. I think there's this mentality, and I've heard it, and I'm just going to address it, is that we should not let brethren in the church default on their bills. We should cover them. We should not let them. And I've wondered about that quite a bit. Just practically, how does that work out? If somebody goes out and invests in a half a million, multi-million, whatever business, dollar business, I don't hold the mortgage insurance for that. The church doesn't hold that. They've joined up, and we can think about the unequal yoke here, and I think we could change some thinking. I'm not going to go into this whole thing, the whole subject, but if we're responsible for all those debts, then we need to sign off before the papers are ever signed. It's that simple. And I think we've kind of gotten into this thing of working into the world's value system. It's infiltrated us. We live among it. So we're in the world, and it's so easy to become of the world, as Jesus prayed that we wouldn't do. And as we keep taking on these things, if the church is going to cover all of our health and all of our financial decisions, good or bad, everything, if it's all taken care of, see what kind of a security feature that is? It's not going to work. And it's actually not sharing. It's going to withhold the real sharing of real world needs. God blesses faith. God multiplies investments. He can bless. God blesses finances. He blesses financial decisions. And we'll never lose in God's investments. I'm going to finish the chapter. I don't think I'm going to read every verse here. But looking at the rewards of giving. Verse 8. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. Philippians 4:19 says, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Jesus Christ. God has made provision. And we actually have this way of getting things in the way so that God can't meet our needs sometimes in the way that he would like to. God will supply our needs. And sometimes that's through a brotherhood. Through the humility of receiving from a brotherhood. And that's okay. But as I said, it produces thanksgiving. Verses 11 and 12. If it's done right. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. For the administration of this service, not only to only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgiving unto God. Thanksgivings unto God. You see how this very physical thing becomes a spiritual work. It's producing grace. It's producing thanksgiving. In verse 13, it's for the glory of God. Whilst by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them, and unto all men, that God may be glorified. The Lord bless you. Let's have a song.